Hey there, everybody. You are listening to This Show Is So Gay. I'm your host, Ken Schneck. This is episode number 406. As always, you can get in touch with us by dropping us a line, send an email on over to Ken at thisshowissogay.com, stroll on over to thisshowissogay.com to learn all about the fun things happening with our little gay radio show that could. You can follow us on Twitter. The handle is thisshowissogay, and of course, go on over to that Facebook. Type in This Show Is So Gay, like us, because we sure as heck like you. We have an incredible episode for you all this week with two amazing guests. Let me introduce the first one to you right this very second. Stan Zimmerman is a writer, a producer, a director, a teacher, an actor, and so much more. Along with James Berg, Stan is one half of the longest-running comedy writing teams, Zimmerman and Berg. Their work includes writing for The Golden Girls, Brothers, Fame, Hooperman, Something Wilder, Roseanne, Wanda at Large, and the highly successful and close to my heart fifth season of The Gilmore Girls. He has earned two Writers Guild of America nominations, one for the episode Rose's Mother from The Golden Girls, and for Don't Ask, Don't Tell, that very, very famous lesbian kiss episode of Roseanne. Additionally, Stan helped write the Emmy and Peabody Award-winning Annie for ABC. He's also written for film, including both Brady Bunch movies. His newest project is a six-episode office comedy called Sex and Execs, and you could watch it on Telefilms. But before we get to that, Stan Zimmerman, welcome to The Show Is So Gay.
Thank you. 406. I feel so cheap.
What would you have preferred?
I went to pop your cherry.
That was 9 years ago.
Oh, my God. Okay. Where have you been all my life?
It's a well-worn path at this point, but we're good at it. We're good at it. Stan, we have so much ground to cover. Are you ready?
Yeah, where do we even start?
Well, we're going to do a little Stan Zimmerman, This Is Your Life. I'm reading the lore says that when you were 10 years old, you had your own little television network in your bedroom.
In my mind and in my bedroom, I was obviously not very athletic, so and very creative in my head, and I was obsessed with television. I would just, the minute that TV guide came, I would just memorize it from front to back. And so I was obsessed with watching TV and how TV worked, and I decided to create my own network in my bedroom. And I made one of those scheduling boards, and
I would schedule
literally 7 nights a week up against, at that time there were only 3 networks, and if there was a TV show that got canceled that I liked, I would bring it onto my network, and I held press conferences in my bedroom before dinner, of course, and I went on the Merv Griffin show and talked about all my shows, and I should have probably been in therapy 3 times a week as a child, but...
I think it's wonderful. You had advertising for it as well.
Yes, and, it's no wonder that, of course, I ended up doing exactly what I dreamed of doing, and that's pretty cool. But sometimes I just have to, when I'm going to network meetings, thinking, my God, if that little 10-year-old kid, but that's what I saw at 10 years old doing it, and then here I've been lucky enough to, work with some amazing people and create television.
There's Entertainment Weekly, there's TV Guide, but they put the trinity together, Entertainment Weekly, TV Guide, and the monthly TV column that you penned for your junior high school newspaper.
Yes, I did. I ripped off a lot of information from all the sources, and I made my own TV news, I think it was like 7th or 8th grade. And just so I could inform, the junior high audience, what was going to come onto television.
Amazing stuff. Well, I would imagine that meeting James Berg, collaborating with James Berg, was definitely a big point in your life.
It was. I didn't know really what a writing partner was.
Yeah.
I had seen, obviously, from the Dick Van Dyke Show, and it seemed like a whole lot of fun to be sitting in a room all day with a bunch of fun people, and especially, a woman with a black bow in her hair in every episode. And that being Rosemarie.
Yes.
And just cracking each other up. And I always had these ideas in my head, but I wasn't a reader, so I wasn't a writer as well. In English class, it always felt like the more flowery and the more adjectives you used, the better grade you got. And that wasn't the kind of person I was. I kind of got to the point. And so I never thought I could write. And television is actually, because you only have 23 minutes and a half hour, it is about getting to the point. And when I met James Berg, it was like, oh, that's what a writing partner is. Someone, and he came from a journalism major, and I was going to NYU for acting. So it was a perfect, duo, because I came from the emotion and the character, and he came from the written word. And over the years, we've kind of taken on each other's personalities, and so that's, I think, how the magic happens. So between school and after school jobs, we would get together and we would, write sitcom spec scripts, and nobody at that time was doing any of that, and we had no even copies of scripts to know what the format was.
Right.
So I would just literally watch TV shows and say, write down, oh, so there's three scenes, and then there's a commercial, and there's three more scenes, and then there's this little thing at the end. I didn't even know it was called the tag. And that's how we learned structure, just by watching other TV shows.
What was the first one where you said, okay, we just produce something quality, and everybody's going to see it?
I thought they were all quality.
Yes, of course.
Probably pretty bad at the beginning. We wrote a lot. I mean, we wrote three spec scripts, I think. And I had moved out here. I graduated college and worked in casting in New York, and I was just tired of being poor and living in a studio on 15th Street, which was the size of a postage stamp.
Oh, yeah.
You've been there.
We are both NYU graduates.
There we go. So you know it.
I know it.
And I always loved California, and Jim and I both had reasons to be out here, and we had a bunch of meetings that we somehow talked people into seeing us, and got great response and knew that we had to be out here in person and living here. So I moved out a few months before he did. And we went to actually a filming of a Cheers episode. And we just this was just the perfect show for us. It was smart and yet slightly silly. And for some reason, that was just the one that spec where everybody in town was just, this is it. And we got offered three different jobs on staff for that season. I was working at the Vista Movie Theater, and Jim was working at a health food store.
Nice.
And I handed the keys in. I said, I start on Monday, I'm taking the weekend off, and I flew to New York, and then luckily never looked back.
Amazing. Amazing. As out writers, you're appearing right now on this show, Is So Gay. How does...
Oh, my God, I am now?
This is why I check
this
in with
it.
People.
Well... Pride Month, so why not? No, actually, there's a whole story in that. Years ago, we got asked to be, because when we started out, and I know this is so hard for people to believe, I've done a couple of seminars with the Outfest here in L.A.,
yeah.
And when especially younger people hear that we had to stay in the closet on the writing staff, even on Golden Girls.
Wow.
We did not talk about our personal life, and our agent said you had to bring a woman to any function. And so there everyone was talking about what they did over the weekend, and I couldn't say, I got drunk and went to Studio One or,
right.
Whatever I was doing. Of course, nothing like that. Just good, clean fun.
Of course.
So, it was a long time, before people were actually out. I remember we went for one job interview, and the producer that was interviewing us, he said to us, so you're Violets. And I thought that meant we were gay. And the look on my face turned bright red. I was just stammered. I didn't know what to say. And then we realized that Violets was the name of the sports team at NYU.
Yes, we are the NYU Violets.
Yes, but when I was there, we never went to any sporting events, unless you call Studio 54 a sporting event.
Right.
Which it was at times, just getting through that front door. Then we got asked to be in an article, a big thing in the LA Weekly, which is a free cool newspaper in L.A. It was going to be about out and closeted people in Hollywood, and our agents were like, you can't be in it and don't have your picture taken, but we did it anyway.
We did it.
We knew we had to do it and had to be truthful to ourselves, and I'm so grateful that, we could have been part of that whole movement about being more open about.
Do you feel that there is a gay sensibility to your writing? Do you feel that your identities play out in...
Golden Girls? yes, there is. There's obviously an outsider quality, I think.
Oh, nice.
Because everyone always asks, how can you guys, especially when we were so young writing Golden Girls, write for those old ladies, or even something like Roseanne. I think being gay and being an outsider and probably being closeted and not being able to talk about it, you observe a lot and
right.
listen. And so, and I also had a very vocal sister and mother and grandmother. So it's just listening and being able to translate that into dialogue.
Wow. I mean, I know that this is your life and this is what you've done, but I'm not sure I could wake up in the morning and not immediately think, yeah, I totally worked on the Golden Girls.
Well, obviously it was very exciting at the time. We were, from the very beginning, we came out in the first season. We pitched a bunch of episodes and they had us do just a freelance script and they liked it so much. And that was one of the ones that got nominated for Writers Guild Award, and we were brought on staff really quickly. And to be on that stage and standing between, you have the audience on one side of you roaring with laughter, and the other side you're watching Bea Arthur and Betty White and Rue McClanahan, and Jim and I had, you know, seen Estelle in Torch Song Trilogy, and
right.
we just couldn't believe our fortune. And at that time, you know, there weren't computers where ratings, you know, you could just Google and find out what the ratings were for the show. So they would announce them, because Golden Girls aired on Saturday, and so at the Monday table read, the network would say, oh, you know, first week you're, you know, number 17. And everyone's like, oh, my God, they couldn't believe they were 17. And then every week it would go up and up and up and up and
wow.
stay that high. And it was so cool to experience that, because nobody knew. I mean, if anyone would have predicted that a show about four older ladies
right.
talks about sex and living and loving and everything would be such a hit, I mean, you think you're crazy.
Yeah.
And that the fact that it has endured so long, and it's been so fun to see everything that's come of it. You know, I've gone to so many drag versions of it. I went to, there was a puppet version of it in New York, which was so much fun, and got to do a Q&A there. And, you know, being involved in different panels with Jim Colucci's beautiful two books that I've luckily been involved with.
Yeah.
And meeting young people, I'll run into people, and when they find out what I do and wrote for the show, they'll start reciting lines that I can't even remember. And that's so cool that it's been able to touch so many generations. And when it first came on, it was like from little kids to my grandmother. It just seems everyone loves that show, and it's still enduring. So.
Yeah. No, I haven't watched an episode in a few hours now, and I'm starting to get a little shaky.
Uh-oh. You can do it. You can do it.
I'm white-knuckling this interview right this very second. Again, listeners, we are here with Stan Zimmerman, writer, producer, director, teacher, actor, so much more. Let's talk about Sex and Execs. Tell everybody about this new show.
So Sex and Execs is a web series, office comedy on telofilms.com, and it is the only lesbian-based content website on the Internet. And
yeah.
it's so great that Kristen Baker, who started it, is exploring all these wonderful stories, and her big mantra is, we will not kill lesbians on our network. And because if you see so many network shows, that's always what happens.
Right.
And she wants to be very supportive of these stories. And I had done a previous one called Skirt Chasers for her that we had Elizabeth Keener and Barry Bostwick and Meredith Baxter, and we got Lea Delaria to sing the theme song.
Nice.
And that was based on a script that Jim and I wrote on spec that we couldn't sell because the network's only buy one gay-related sitcom per year. So luckily Kristen made it, and we got to do that, and I got to direct one of the episodes, and then Kristen asked for our next project. And this, we actually had sold to Lifetime years ago as two separate half hours. It's kind of a Rashomon, where it's one day in the life of a women's athletic wear company, but told from two points of view. One are the bosses, and one are the assistants. And we thought that's such a great and interesting relationship. I have been both. And when you're an assistant, you know everything about your boss, and your
oh,
boss
yeah.
knows practically nothing about you. And you're so close, yet there's a line drawn where, you know, you definitely should not cross that line. And it's interesting watching. So we watch four bosses, and the main story in the pilot is Olivia Dabo from The Wonder Years plays a lesbian mom who's come back to work after having a child, and she was a real tiger woman before she left. And now everybody treats her like a little mommy. And so how does a woman juggle those two parts of her personality?
Now, it wasn't enough that you penned so many of the words we see there, but then you took on this director role. Who is Stan Zimmerman as a director?
Oh, I love directing. I would love to stop writing and just directing, actually. Maybe 6-7 years ago, I started directing theater, which has always been a dream of mine, and to go back to New York and do plays, and was doing a bunch of revivals, and then I got talked into writing a bunch of theater pieces as well. And I actually have two plays at the Hollywood Fringe Festival now, one called Pledge and one called Pinata, which I did not write, but I'm directing. And there's something very exciting about directing other people's work, or even my work, to interpret the words and just play. And also, when you're doing theater, you're not involved with networks and studios and a zillion people giving you notes and telling you what their life story is. It's me and the actors and the script. And with Sex and Execs, it was exciting for me because they gave me an opportunity to direct on film. I had only directed one other before Skirt Chasers, a little music video called Horace Mascara, All I Want. It's their song. And we filmed it all over New York City. It's about all the gay bars in New York. The main scene was shot at the Cock.
Of course.
Yes, I was standing on the bar at the Cock at 2 o'clock in the afternoon. And interesting enough, one of our extras was Laverne Cox before Laverne Cox was really Laverne Cox. So if you look there, you can see how beautiful she is dancing to this little story that we created.
Now, if I were to seek out all of the actors on Sex and Execs, what would they say about you as a director?
That I'm very specific.
Okay.
Coming as a writer, I really wanted them to get the words down. You know, Jim and I take a lot of time, you know, discussing whether there's a comma or an and or the or not a the. And so just get the words down as written, and then we can play in improv, which is always fun to do. But at least let's get it, you know, filmed first that way. And also I learned a lot because I've shadowed many directors on half-hour comedies from the great James Burroughs. And just, and also in directing theater, you know, where you put your hand, where you put your
right.
eye, where you look, could make something funny or not funny. So actors, you know, first that haven't worked with me go, well, why do I have to hold my hand this way or look that way? And I say, just trust me. And when they do, it gets a laugh. And then they're finally like, ah, just tell me what to do. So, you know, I've had many, many actors I work with continually, and that's been really cool as they get to know how I work and trust me. And we just have a fantastic time. And I'm not a screamer, yeller. I think it's very important to have fun in what you do. And I've worked on too many shows, like Roseanne,
right.
where you were petrified to go to work. When we started on Roseanne, they said to us, because, you know, she was known for firing writers. And so they said, just find the tallest person and stand behind them and don't let her see the whites of your eyes. You're a goner. And we were actually on the season where Tom and Roseanne passed out numbered T-shirts. They had 21 writers because they hired a lot of their stand-up comedy friends. And so the very first day, they had us all said, get in line. We're passing out T-shirts. And I thought it was something funny. All the other writers hated it.
Right.
But their idea was like, you know, we just want you to have numbers because if we know your names, then we won't want to fire you. But if you're a number, we can just say, you know, number 12, you're gone.
Oh, my gosh. What was your number?
Mine was 13 because I was born on October 13th. So I was like, I made it so I got in line to get the number 13 T-shirt, which I still have, by the way. And it's a prized possession. And interestingly enough, I've had so many full circle moments. 2 years ago, I was in Moscow for 4 months helping them develop a Russian Roseanne show and working with the writer there and also in casting. And I had nothing to do with Trump there, I swear to God, but I was living in Moscow. I loved it. I was scared to death to go, you know, as a gay man and as a Jew. And I had the best time and I met great people that are still friends to this day. And I would love to go back.
That's amazing. That is amazing.
It was a cool trip.
Now, there are LGBTQ angles to this new show, are there not?
Yes. Well, Olivia Dabo being the lesbian.
Yeah.
So we do have our obviously some lesbian jokes. And there's Miguel Pinzon plays Natalie Dreyfus's best friend and also her assistant. We thought that was an interesting relationship when you hire your best friend, and she's the daughter of Sandra Bernhard, who runs the company, and so she's kind of a party girl and, you know, doesn't take the job too seriously, and she has her bestie, who's a fantastic, handsome, and sexual gay guy. And in the pilot as well, one of the other stories is they both fall for the hot IT guy, who's played by Matthew Smith, who was on America's Next Top Model.
Nice.
On the last season, yes. And, of course, we rip his shirt open as many times as we can.
As you should.
As we should, yes. And he's a sweet guy. I've known him a long time, so it was a lot of fun that we got to actually work together on film.
Nice. Well, tell our listening audience what this new show adds to all the content out there. Why should we all go check this out?
Well, since The Office, I think we need a new office comedy.
Yeah.
And I think this is the one, and it's fun because a lot of people have been bosses or assistants, and you get to see through their point of view what it's like to struggle as an assistant and, you know, make ends meet, and then those that get to move up and what that is like to obtain boss status. And it's just a lot of fun, and it's a great multi-ethnic cast, and Mindy Sterling from Austin Powers is
in
it, and Bane Gibby from Enlightened and The Comeback, and there's just so many wonderful people, and it was really cool to tell eight people's stories. That was hard to do in
that
limited amount of time.
Well, we have to end with a little learning annex with Stan Zimmerman, or we could call it the casting couch, for all of our listeners out there who just want to get those words from their head onto the page and get them in front of people. What is Stan Zimmerman's patented advice to get your work out there?
Well, just write, and luckily now you can even use your iPhone and just make it, or get in front of other eyes to make it, or make it a play and put it on a stage, or do stage readings. That's the beauty. The minute you turn on your computer, your life can begin.
Let me push you a little bit on that one. So if we want to get more LGBTQ content out there, how receptive do you think the industry is right now to that?
That's a loaded question.
Yeah.
There are places like Telefilms, which is actually having a contest now for more new lesbian content where you can go pitch it to them and they will help get it produced. And they're also very open to reading new material. The major networks, it's still very difficult, unfortunately, and they still don't want to do too much, LGBTQ content.
Right.
And when something like The Real McNeils, you know, can't last that long, they look at that and say, well, see, it doesn't last. Even though we've had, you know, Will and Grace, and we've had so many successes, I still would love to see more multi-cam or any single-cam comedies with gays and lesbians as the leads. And not necessarily being about coming out, but just about our everyday lives.
Yeah. Well, one place we know we can go for content is Telefilms. And so, listeners, you need to stroll on over right this very second to telofilms.com, and you can check out Sex and Execs. There is so much fun content happening there. I watched it all yesterday. It is such a blast. It's a blast.
Well, we hope we can make more.
Yes.
Some place like a Hulu or Netflix to pick it up, and then we can really have a budget. We made that for just $25,000.
Wow. That's incredible. That's incredible. Well, Stan, you and your writing partner there, you guys are doing incredible work, and
you
are putting content out there. We talk about this all the time over the past 9 years. We want to see our lives represented right there on the screen, and you guys are making our lives come true right there, and it's very exciting stuff.
We have a special new project, which I hope will come to fruition, that I would love to come back and talk to you about, that I think you would really love and the community would totally embrace. So keep your fingers crossed, light candles, send up pink bubbles.
Thank you for being a friend. Travel down the road and back again. Your heart is true, you're a pal and a confidant. I'm not ashamed to say, I hope it always will stay this way. Take a bow. you for being a friend. Thank you for being a friend. La la la.
All right, folks, and we are back. Well, one of the absolute perks about doing this show is featuring incredible events that are happening all over the world. This week, I want to tell you about Backlot Bash, the hottest, most rockin', and most attended outdoor women's festival taking place every Pride in Chicago, so close to where I sit right now. Each day showcases a different mix of music and entertainment for the entire community. This year, it is happening over two weekends. We could barely contain it with one. June 16th and June 23rd to June 25th. Here to talk all about this extravaganza is one of the founders and producers of Backlot Bash, Amy Klugin. Amy, welcome to This Show Is So Gay.
Hi, Ken. Thank you so much for having me.
How exciting is this, Amy?
Well, it's exciting. Every year it gets more and more exciting for us. We love putting this event on. It puts a smile on everybody's face, and it gives everyone a sense of community and celebration over Pride weekend every year. So, yeah, it's an exciting time of year for everybody.
Now, I don't know if you know this, Amy. This is not the first year of Backlot Bash. You've actually been doing this for a while.
Oh, I know. I know. Yes, absolutely. We've been... This is actually our 14th year producing the event, and geez, looking back to our first year and what it was and what it is today has been quite a transformation and an exciting one. But yeah, this is our 14th year, and we're going strong and try to make it better and better for everybody each year. So,
well, let's cast our minds back to 2000. What was it? 2003? 2004?
2004. Yep.
What were we trying to do in 2004?
Well, my business partner, Christina Roberts, and I, we wanted to have an event for women, mostly for women, that, you know, kind of addressed the limited presence of female artists in the Chicago LGBT community, or at least a platform for them to play and perform live music, to do their thing on stage, and to have a mostly women audience sort of enjoying it. And it was in, you know, it takes place every Pride weekend. So, of course, the Chicago Pride Parade, held always on the Sunday of the last weekend in June, is a big draw for, you know, close to probably a million people. And we just kind of wanted to carve out a little niche within that group and have a party which started as a Saturday before the big parade. So it was a one-day event back in 2004. We had, you know, a makeshift stage and our friends, a band perform. And it was a more sort of simple version, but the same authenticity I think you'll find today in the event, like that it was our first year. We try to keep that feel going.
Yeah.
So, but over the years, it's grown to be a, you know, a weekend long event and now two weekends long for the past couple of years.
Nice.
So the genesis of it in 2004 was a little more simplified version, but the reason we did it sort of remains true today, and the event means actually really different things to different people that attend, and that's the beauty of it. We love that about it.
Well, let's get one of those opinions that we know for sure. What does the event mean to you?
Well, you know, for me, I love hearing music and music by female artists, so for me, it was a chance to showcase you know, some of my friend musicians in the community. I can't sing or play any instrument, but I enjoy it, listening and advocating. So, you know, for me, it means giving those folks a platform to perform in front of a group of people and get their name out and their music out. And beyond that, you know, politically, you know, I feel like my feelings about the event politically have evolved as well since 2004. And now, you know, we sort of engage, you know, in a different way beyond just music with our attendees. And, you know, like HRC is there every year with their booth, you know, promoting what they do and getting the word out on what they do. A lot of local organizations are there as well. So for me, it takes on a bigger sense of community now. And that's what, you know, Christina and I love that about the event. We help in the off season, you know, organize, you know, buses to take people to Springfield, the capital of Illinois, you know, to lobby for marriage equality at the time. Like, so we're engaged beyond that one weekend. And so for me, it means that. It means establishing and our sense of community, and especially, you know, for lesbian, you know, bi, trans women, and actually everyone obviously is welcome at our event. But it is that's what it's become for me. So its meaning has changed over the years.
Yeah, I was going to ask, because there's a lot out there right now about how Pride this year, you know, a lot of our brothers and sisters in other cities have already had some of their Pride celebrations. We just had one of our celebrations here in Cleveland last weekend. A lot of people are saying, well, it just feels a little bit different this year. It feels like, well, we do have to be slightly more political, if not outrageously more political, given that it is such a different climate. So what will people see in Backlot Bash 2017? Will there be that feeling as well?
Well, I think that feeling is harbored in everybody. So
yeah.
for us, Christina and myself, yes, it's a fun backdrop for sure. But in this political climate, you know, the need for awareness and activism and leaving inspired to speak your voice or to get involved in the community is so important and ever present. So I think, you know, in terms of that feeling that we want people to leave inspired, not just because of what they experience, but because of you know, how being gay or lesbian is, it's important for them to feel comfortable. And we actually have a lot of people that come to our event from outside Chicago. Chicago is a very welcoming, very LGBTQ friendly community. When people come in from other Midwestern states, let's say, or small towns, or women that may not be out yet, and they experience this overwhelming sense of community and support and joy and happiness, and they realize that they're not so different and that there is a place for them and there is a place for their voice, and they leave, you know, empowered. And for us, it's very gratifying when, you know, folks that might be leaving the event at the weekend say, geez, you know, this is the first time that I've had a chance to be myself, completely myself, because I can't be out at work, or my family's not accepting of me. And, you know, we just have a really gratifying feeling that people feel whole after attending our event and engaged and inspired. And, you know, given the political environment, that's more important than ever for everyone to find their footing and feel that pride and feel that connection and speak their voice. So for us, it is an important time. You know, we're not apprehensive about it. We feel like this is I feel, and I know Christina does too, that this is a period of opportunity for the community, you know, to not be complacent with marriage equality and to reach out to our, you know, brothers and sisters who still are fighting for their equal footing, as we still are in many respects too. So I feel like it's a great opportunity for solidarity within the community. And that's, to us, is a big purpose, you know, is a purposeful for us to hope that people leave, you know, feeling that same way.
So great, Amy. Now, what is Amy's role in all this? What is Amy Klugin really good at?
Well, okay, that's a good question. You know, Christina and I find that we have a nice division of labor. Like, Christina, my business partner, is, like, awesome at identifying new emerging talent and working on that end. I'm logistics. I do numbers. It's not my passion, but it's sort of how we nestled into our roles. But we both work together in so many aspects of this festival. It's, you know, it's working with the local politicians and city to get the permits and the licenses, and working with our great sponsors who are big supporters in the LGBT community. So I think, like, we're sort of a jack of all, we have to be a jack of all trades. It's not Christina or my, you know, primary job throughout the year, though it does take, you know, a year or more to plan each festival. So we do the best we can with our core competencies. And, you know, I think ultimately our role is just to ensure that it's safe, happy, environment and welcoming for everybody. And we both enjoy that so, so much.
So what I hear you saying is that Christina needs to start picking up the slack more with the numbers. I hear you.
Yeah, I think we both need to pick up the slack for each other in many areas. But ultimately, you know, it's funny. Christina and I have been doing this for, this is our 14th year, as you mentioned. And we're business partners and great friends. And it's so gratifying to be able, you know, to work with someone for this long and grow an event together and know that, you know, we both, you know, had a part in achieving, you know, what it is today. And there are areas we both can improve in for sure, but ultimately it's an awesome relationship, and I wouldn't change it for the world.
Okay. That was very diplomatic. Very well done. We're keeping this partnership together. You know, right there in the description, I see this word that jumps out at me and makes me nervous: outdoor.
Which word?
Outdoor. Now, occasionally, I would imagine there's some inclement weather. How do we make sure that doesn't happen? I would assume Christina's in charge of that.
Christina's in charge of the weather. Believe me, she is on that radar. We have a team of people that have their radars on their phones out. Yes, it is a huge risk every year with the weather, especially being in Chicago. It could be, super sunny one minute and then thunderstorms the next. So we used to buy rain insurance every year, but there was just a point where we were like, you know what, this is such a roll of the dice no matter what. And even if we have it, it rains, it never reaches the amount it's supposed to help us. So we just adapt. I'll tell you, we've had downpours and the people stay. We have a little covered tunnel before people enter the enclosed lot where we do the event. And they hover there or under our sponsor tents. You know, they let it pass. And then we're back to action. So it is a consideration every year, but we seem to work through it. And you know, it never rains in Chicago on Pride Day. Or if it does, the skies open for the parade every year. So we feel there's higher power that's helping us out here with our event. So we just like to kind of put our faith in that.
Nice. I'm all for it. Now, a key element of all of this, of course, is trying to achieve a great representation across so many different lines of diversity. How do we work towards getting that great representation, to getting folks to turn out so it is as welcoming as possible?
Well, sure. Well, in most communities, and in Chicago as well, there are so many facets to the community, and everyone seems to have a social media outlet, and over time building relationships with other folks who are involved in other organizations. So we try to do a really good job reaching out, letting folks know what's going on for the weekend, and reaching, you know, their core base or constituencies of theirs. We go to events, we promote it in so many different ways. And yeah, it's time consuming, it's hard, but that's what we love doing. We love marketing and creating an event where everybody, no matter what their background or economic status or, you know, or gender identity, feels welcome. And I think that as we've grown and as we've, you know, come along 14 years now, I think that it's, it's sort of a given that people expect that. And hopefully we deliver, although we are very conscientious of that, even with our performers as well, creating something for everyone. So, you know, we need to always be conscientious of that. So that's our approach.
Nice. Now, I'm asking you this, obviously, because you're the numbers person. I would never ask Christina this question. But how do you, at the end of the day, after everything's over, it's now June 26th, how do you measure if it's been a success?
Yeah, well, first, we're probably still sleeping on June 26th.
I bet.
Catching up on that. So let's say it's June 27th.
Let's do that.
And we wake up. No, I'm just joking with you. But, well, first of all, we do want to make sure that did the event end with, you know, a successful production?
Yeah.
Were there any glitches? Did the musicians feel comfortable and great on stage? Did the audience receive them well? So there are many sort of categories of success, and it's not solely about the numbers at the end of the day, although the event is a pretty expensive event to put on with the talent lately and last few years we've been bringing in and trying to create a better and better event, and that's fine. We're happy to do it, but at the end of the day, if everyone leaves asking about, oh, they can't wait for next year or whatever, that's the true gauge. And yeah. keeping people involved and engaged through our social media platforms. The entire year is also a big gauge of our success. So there are many different modes of measurement, and certainly financial success is one of them. We do like to give a portion of our proceeds every year to different charities or groups that advocate for women or girls, or, you know, Ride for AIDS, things like that. So, you know, we try to not have the same organization every year. We try to mix it up. And so those are also nice gauges of success when we can help another organization out. So there's a lot of components to that question, that piece of it. And so that's pretty much where we, you know, how we gauge it.
Amazing. And we have just incredible names attached to this year's event. Kiyomi Valentine, who we love, who's been on the show a bunch. J.D. Sampson from right here in Cleveland. Bria and Chrissy were on the show years ago. It's a lot of talent coming this year.
Yeah, we're super excited about that. Yes, and J.D. spent a lot of time in Chicago, too, you know, back in her days. So we're excited if anyone has a Midwestern or Chicago connection, because if they don't, they tend to come here and fall in love with it over Pride weekend, because it is, you know, a city that really embraces Pride in every respect. But yeah, as far as talent goes, with DJ Good Boy coming in too, you know, from LA, and, you know, we've got, you know, American singer, you know, rapper, radio host Dev, who is performing on Sunday. That's our Pride parade day after the parade during our festival. And, you know, Daniela C, C and Gunn, DJ duo C and Gunn. Now, you might remember Daniela C. She played Max on The L Word.
Yes, of course.
She's coming in as well. So it's a fun, exciting lineup, and we're thrilled. And our whole event kicks off the weekend before Pride at Lark Lounge in Boys Town in Lakeview. And Whitney Mixner is coming in for that. So we've had Whitney, you'll come in a few times for some of our events, and she's so cool and down to earth and loves coming to Chicago. So they feel right at home, and it's an awesome feeling when we, you know, we have so much pride in our city, as most people do, and when they can come in and experience just a solid, great time and know that the people are real and genuine and truly appreciate them coming in for us, like, it's special. And there are, you know, we always try to keep our performer lineup fresh and exciting every year. So, you know, you'll see more, you know, celebrities and local talent always in the mix, which is important to us.
And I love that there's a Pride Family Fun Fest on Saturday the 24th. We have face painting and puppets and kids activities, and we're being family inclusive here.
The Family Fest, the Pride Family Fest gives us the most pride each year when we do that. It's one of our favorite events because, you know, our festival is a music festival. It's high energy. And this is a day when just for families, LGBT families, allies, everybody's welcome. But to see so many gay families and kids, and they're having fun and they're connecting with each other. They're talking about schools. They're maybe talking about, you know, family and what they went through to have their baby or whatnot. And they're connecting with each other. And it's just the most gratifying event. And that happens in the same parking lot that we, in the same location as our event. And then 2 hours later, we transform it from a kid-friendly zone to, you know, to our party that Saturday. So our Pride Family Fest is Saturday, June 24th, and from 11 to 2. And it's one of our, we hold that event so close to our heart. So we love that one.
All right, last piece of the puzzle. I'm feeling pretty confident, though you, Amy, and Christina are working so hard on this event that you are not doing it by yourselves. Why don't you give a shout out to all the people helping you out?
Oh, that's so sweet of you. Thank you. Well, the first person I'd like to give a shout out for is Christina's wife, Heather. She's the better half, and I'm the other half, we like to say. She does so much for us every year, too, you know, by default of being married to Christina. So that's always an awesome help for us every year. And then, of course, you know, our friends and family that that keep us grounded in planning and that fly in to help us out for that weekend and volunteer their time. We're incredibly grateful to them, as well as to our sponsors, BMO Harris, who does our family day and sponsors that every year, Fetzer, local mortgage company, National Mortgage Company, A&N Mortgage, and of course HRC and local organizations like our Chicago Metropolitan Sports Association. They help us out too. And we're proud to serve Miller Lite at our event. Everyone seems to love all their brands. And our craft brewery, Revolution Brewing, Chicago-based, is also part of everything. So we wouldn't be where we are today without, our paying sponsors and supporters and all our volunteers and friends that help us out. So shout out to them, and mainly shout out to everyone that comes and has a great time and enjoys, feeling a great pride and part of the community. We're very grateful.
There it is. Listeners, June 16th and June 23rd to June 25th, you must go check out the Backlot Bash. It is the hottest, most rockin', and most attended outdoor women's festival taking place every Pride in Chicago. You can, of course, stroll on over to backlotbashchicago.com. That's backlotbashchicago.com. I will say this to you, Amy, and I implore you to please convey this over to Christina. What you guys are doing is you are providing people with an opportunity, and there is no greater thing in the world than providing people with the opportunity to be their fully realized selves, to be in a community, to just be around other people, having a great time and having great conversations and encountering other humans on this journey. And you guys are providing that experience for people, and it's a great, great thing.
Thank you, Ken. We really appreciate that, and we couldn't agree more. Thank you.
All right, folks, and we are back. Well, a little time left on this week's episode, so let's get to some of the latest LGBTQ news that's out there. It just feels like Pride Month out there. I have to question how much this new little icon on Facebook where you can pride people's posts, which I enjoy immensely, and just keep priding instead of liking or loving. I love hitting that little rainbow. It just feels more like Pride this month. By the way, I hope it's not just a button on Facebook that has a little rainbow on it, but because there is so much pride going on, though it is not without a little tiny bit of controversy out there. When they had the big Pride March in D.C. this past weekend, one group, hashtag No Justice, No Pride, disrupted the parade route. They certainly wanted to be heard about the problematic aspects, particularly about the representation that we are seeing in Pride and LGBT organizations and movements across the country, and also about corporate influence on all of these Pride celebrations. Well, a lot of people were offended by the disruption in the parade route in D.C., and I have to immediately turn to Mark S. King, who has been on the show before, and his wonderful blog, My Fabulous Disease. And you can access his amazing words over at marksking.com. And I want to read a little bit from a piece that he wrote. It's called Those Offended by Hashtag No Justice, No Pride Should Learn LGBT History. He wrote this: Hell hath no fury like a privileged white gay man who has waited too long for the next Pride parade contingent to sashay by. When hashtag No Justice, No Pride blocked the DC Pride parade route on June 10th, causing an hour delay to an already epic 3-hour parade, you could hear the ice cubes impatiently rattling in Bloody Mary glasses for blocks. Revelers at three locations on the route were forced to contend with mostly Black and Latinx protesters, women and trans folks among them, shouting chants about how DC Pride was beholden to corporations and institutions and a police state that do not have their welfare in mind. But let's set aside their message for the moment, since it hardly mattered to angry parade attendees anyway. What infuriated them most was the timing and location of such an action, disrupting the flow of hunks and baby strollers and such. Protesters really should do their best to be, obedient. They weren't, and this is why we can't have nice things. The Stonewall riots were not particularly well-timed either. Those rioters, also mostly people of color, also including gender-bending outcasts, displayed the fury of years of being marginalized, discounted, and mistreated. The parallels between then and now are plain to see, and just having to type that sentence makes me wish LGBT history were taught in schools or shared among us at the very least. With a couple of days to give thoughtful consideration to the event, offended parade attendees flooded comment sections online, which is, of course, the perfect place to make your privilege most widely known. And he says more about what happened there at the DC Pride Parade, and I urge you to check it out. Again, that's Mark S. King. He's got his blog, My Fabulous Disease. You can access it at marksking.com. And the name of this piece from which I just read is called Those Offended by Hashtag No Justice, No Pride Should Learn LGBT History. And holy cow, do I agree with that. This is the kind of stuff that we have to do. And we talked to Sarah Prager a few weeks ago about her book, Queer, There, and Everywhere, where you can actually gift a book like this to someone who has come out, because we're not automatically taught LGBTQ history in schools. We're just not. And if we are taught, it's completely whitewashed. If you look at that movie Stonewall, hey, look, an LGBTQ movement made its way onto the big screen. Yeah, and look what happened. They took out all the people of color to make it palatable to white audiences around the country. So when someone comes out, give them a book, give them Queer, There, Everywhere. Download the Quist app. You yourself, download the Quist app so that you can learn about the LGBTQ history that happened on this day. It is not automatically taught, and we do have to work at it. And because more often than not, we don't share our sexual orientation with our parents, we in the LGBTQ community do not share our sexual orientation with our parents, that means we're not getting it from our biological families either. We're not getting the history from them. So it's so important that we first know our history, and number two, pass it on to other people. Other news that's out there, United States Senator Tim Kaine, you remember Tim Kaine? He was Hillary Clinton's running mate in last year's presidential election. Well, Tim Kaine has introduced legislation to protect all LGBT Americans in housing. The legislation was introduced this week by Senator Kaine in the Senate. Earlier this year, back in March, a companion bill was introduced in the House of Representatives by Scott Taylor and Brad Schneider. The Fair and Equal Housing Act would provide non-discrimination protections for LGBT people, adding sexual orientation and gender identity as protected characteristics to the Fair Housing Act. HRC, the Human Rights Campaign's Government Affairs Director David Stacey, said this, quote, "In far too many places across the country, LGBTQ people are at risk of being denied housing or kicked out of their homes just because of who they are. What side of a state line you live on should not determine your ability to find a place to live without fear or discrimination. We thank Senator Tim Kaine for his continued leadership working to end unjust discrimination against LGBTQ people." Just to let all of you know, listeners, there are only 20 states and the District of Columbia which currently ban housing discrimination based on sexual orientation and gender identity in state law. Two others ban sexual orientation discrimination only. So again, 30 states. This would affect all 50 states, but it would certainly bring the 30 states in line with the other 20 states that are already offering these protections. A player on the United States women's national soccer team allegedly dropped out of a game to avoid wearing a Rainbow Pride jersey. The national team had announced that in recognition of Pride Month, a special kit with rainbows would be worn. That, of course, kit meaning uniform. The women's national team had announced it would wear the uniforms in away friendlies against Sweden on June 8th and Norway 3 days later. Following the decision, one evangelical Christian player dropped out of the friendlies for, quote, personal reasons. So even right there, having a uniform with a rainbow on it, too much for some of our soccer players. Well, there's been a lot of talk about the White House's refusal or just complete silence on Pride Month. Ivanka Trump tweeted about it, and she was just roundly vilified for what she put out there, particularly given the fact that her father, the President of the United States, Donald Trump, has said you know, nothing about LGBT Pride Month, but that is making some people happy. He, yes, has abolished the annual Pride Month proclamation, which was issued by Barack Obama, and has shelved the Pride festivities at the White House. The Republican leader released proclamations marking June as National Homeownership Month, National Ocean Month, African American Music Appreciation Month, and Great Outdoors Month, but no such proclamation was released for LGBT Pride Month. But such a move is not without its supporters. Happily, the Family Research Council, they are celebrating this, calling on him to go further and ban all Pride celebrations within the government. The Anti-LGBT Family Research Council praised Trump for, quote, refusing to declare June LGBT Pride Month. In a blog, they called for him to step in and put a stop to display that puts a sexual fringe on the same pole as Old Glory. They wrote, quote, today the Pentagon carried on a tradition President Obama began in 2012, holding a special Pride event at the same time that other military leaders are ready to turn the page on 8 years of social engineering. It was a disappointing development for conservatives who thought they had an ally in new Defense Secretary James Mattis. So that is the Family Research Council. They're also upset about a rainbow flag flying. The former GOP majority leader has called on the Trump administration to reaffirm a ban on transgender soldiers and outlaw military pride celebrations. Tom DeLay, who served as majority leader in the United States House of Representatives from 2003 to 2005, signed a letter authored by the Conservative Action Project group. He was joined by former Congressman David McIntosh and Bob McEwen, as well as former Reagan officials Edwin Meese, Becky Norton Dunlop, and T. Kenneth Cribb Jr. The letter calls on President Trump and Defense Secretary James Mad Dog Mattis to review and rescind the Obama-era policies that hinder military readiness, such as permitting Pride events. As we covered on last week's show, we had trans cadets who graduated from their academies, but they will not be allowed to serve. There is still a lot of work to be done in the military. We have not figured it all out yet. Not yet. Not yet. And finally, in the great state of Washington, a high school tradition turned into tension at a South King County high school. As they do at the end of every school year, Highline High School students painted a giant rock called Spirit Rock, which sits in the school's front yard. This year's image was the gay pride flag, but not long after, and in the middle of the night, because when else would you do this, the pride flag was painted over with an American flag and the name of the president, Donald Trump. You know what, guys? If you stand by that, do it in broad daylight. But no, you know you're doing something wrong. That's why you do it in the middle of the night. Things got emotional after photos of the pro-Trump Spirit Rock painting showed up on social media. Most of the Pride flag and Trump sign paintings have since been painted over, but now Spirit Rock is totally off limits for everybody. The school district is planning a listening session for parents and students to come up with ideas on how to move forward. Senior Juliana Bartolome said this, quote, I was a little mad. I guess you could say that. Freshman Maya Santos said this, quote, I want everything to be over. Summer's almost here. I was very surprised that something like this would actually happen at my school. So, yeah, a lot of anger about rainbows all over the place. A lot of anger. You can't play soccer. They're not happy about that. They're not happy about the Pentagon flying a rainbow flag. And apparently some people are not happy about a rainbow being painted on a rock. Happy Pride Month to all of you. Seriously, get out there. You got to go celebrate Pride Month. Go interact with other people. There are great events happening. Get out there. Go use your voice the way you know how to use it to make a difference for your LGBTQ brothers and sisters, to support all of our allies out there. Use your voice, make a difference. And please remember, especially during Pride Month, why be gay when you can be so gay?